What's up, guys? This is the 4-0 Forum, the show for Atlanta sports fans to sound off on the latest in the 4-0-4 sports scene. I'm your host, Isaiah, and I'll be here to guide you through all the triumphs and the tragedies of sports around the 4-0-4. It won't always be pretty, but I can promise you it will be fun. So ATL, let's talk.
What's up, Atlanta? This is Isaiah Smith back with another episode of the 4-0 Forum. It seems like it's been a while. So hoping to get into a little bit more of a consistent rhythm with the show and be able to talk NBA basketball. There's a ton happening right now. It is easily the best time of the year, I would say. Excited about today because I have a first-time guest, one of my closest friends, none other than Jack Gale, a close friend, NBA expert, NBA insider. He knows all the juiciest gossip. And so I'm excited to have him on today's show. Before we get into the NBA and talk a little bit about the Hawks as well, don't forget to check me out on Facebook, on Twitter, at the 4-0 Forum. Also, you can follow me personally at IsaiahSmith30. Be sure to subscribe, like, all those good things. Leave comments wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts. Just search the name of the show, and we will be there ready for your listening pleasure. So, first of all, welcome, Jack. Thank you so much for being on. Tell everyone hello, where to find you on social media if you want that kind of praise and adoration after the show tonight, because we have a great audience.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me. I don't know if I have any social media presence at all now. I've been working hard to do that. So as long as you are supporting the ATL Hawks, that's all I care about.
That's the truth. We are I think Jack may be a bigger Hawks fan than me, to be completely honest. You definitely have watched more Hawks than I have in this season and more basketball. So that is to be commended, and that's why we have you on the show. So I'm really excited for what we got tonight. So I want to lead off with, you know, our way too early predictions segment. It's way too early to predict anything. A college football podcaster that I listen to always says, at this point in the season, you can make observations but not draw conclusions. And so, quite honestly, anyone who's drawn any type of conclusion from the first 12 games, I think, for most teams is – pretty much an idiot. But I do want to start off. Let's start talking MVP, because the MVP race is going to be one that's fun, that everyone's going to want to tune into and watch. So right now, 12 games in or 10 games, however many, who's your MVP for the year?
Oh my goodness. I think it would be disrespectful to say anybody other than Giannis. he gets everything he wants. They won 9 games straight. They lost to our wonderful Hawks, but I think that he got every shot that he wanted to, and it's impossible to guard him. I think that to get through the East, you're going to have to get through Giannis. I think that's what everybody has planned their teams around. And, you know, I think most teams have come up short from what I've seen so far. I think that Giannis is going to be an unstoppable force. I think the only other, you know, MVP candidate I could see is Luka, because he's so creative and so fun to watch. But I think that Giannis has the pedigree and the determination to really capture that.
Yeah,
that award.
That's my pick. I mean, the record speaks for itself. You are your record, and Giannis was 9-0, 9-1 now. And the only other guy in that conversation, you said it all, is really Luka. Yep. Only other guy in that conversation, you can argue Nikola Jokic is in the conversation,
and I go Steph too. This gives me the vibes of Steph's year before he broke his hand or whatever. He's coming out so strong, but his team is just not living up to expectations. So I don't think that you gotta count him into the MVP category this early.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, whatever Phoenix is going to do with Devin Booker may work his way into the conversation. But I think it's at this point, I think most of the year we're going to talk about how it's Giannis's award to lose, just because the Bucks are going to probably run the East and they will probably be the best team. And Giannis has, you know, a great supporting cast, a great coach. They're going to put him in good positions. He's going to get whatever he wants because he's a freak. And that's just going to be the end of it. So I think it's Giannis' award to lose, whether the voters think that or not. And if Luka, you know, puts the Mavs.
It's all about narrative. It's all about narrative. And he's too nice to disagree with. I don't know if there's been someone so agreeable with the community other than Steph Curry in the, you know, the past 10 years or so. Mm-hmm. Even LeBron was very, you know, controversial for leaving the Cavaliers for the Miami. I think that Giannis sticking with his team, like riding so hard, I think that the consistency narrative might break through, but it's not compelling in any way. He's just too good at basketball.
I think we talked about the only players who can really vie for the award will be Giannis and Luka. I think the only other narrative better than Giannis is Luka's. If he continues scoring at this pace, continues to carry the Mavs into the postseason, wins a bunch of games, gets them in, you know, top two, top three, top two or top three playoff seed in the conference, with essentially a supporting cast that should be good, but a lot of times isn't, which is the weird part about it.
I agree with that take. Yeah, they're so good. Not to jump ahead in any way, but I wrote them down as my Western Conference Finals, like one of the teams there, and then I immediately had to put Memphis on the same tier as them because they're equally as volatile. On paper, everybody on their team looks like they're gonna fit and they're gonna do well, but it comes down to playoff scheming and. Yeah. They can both get shut down so easily. Exactly. It's terrible. That's what's blowing up their narrative for me. Like, I think everybody, in terms of MVP, and I even want to give him Defensive Player of the Year, Giannis, everybody's scheming their teams around him. I feel like they come up short on answers. I feel like with Ja and Luka, you can scheme around them, and it comes down to their supporting cast, which they have both great supporting casts, but it's hard to be consistent in the playoffs.
True. The playoffs are difficult. We've seen it before. We know that's a fact. So you mentioned it a little bit, Defensive Player of the Year. Is Giannis your Defensive Player of the Year at this point?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody has a compelling argument. So far, yeah, he has the he leads the league in defensive rating, but it's all off of help of Brooke Lopez. As long as Brooke Lopez is healthy, Giannis will be the Defensive Player of the Year. If he has to lead the team, he will lead it in energy, but there's no way that he can cover the floor as well without having somebody as solid as Brooke Lopez just covering the rim so where he can come help side and do something cool later.
Also very, very true. I mean, I think Giannis he's in that LeBron category that we talk about when LeBron was quote unquote prime LeBron, and he mm-hmm. could have easily swept all the major awards from whatever years you want to say 2010 through 2018 or whatever. And so mm-hmm. Giannis is in that category, and it's up to the voters. Again, the narrative that I like for Defensive Player of the Year, that I want Mikal Bridges to win Defensive
Player of the Year. Oh, yeah.
I've always been a big Mikal Bridges fan, even when he was in college at Villanova. I just love the way he played. He's the perfect consummate role player, 3-and-D guy. His game's developed so much from, you know, the kind of awful story of the Sixers drafting him and his mom works for the organization and then trading him on draft night to Phoenix. And then him blossoming from that. I've loved his narrative.
It's brutal. Yeah. And for him to work so hard in college, I totally agree. That's true.
I want him to win.
He has a perfect narrative. Yeah,
he does. I mean, I love the narrative, the story. He just got paid this offseason. I want him to win it. Will he win it? I don't know. It's too early to tell, but probably not, according to your facial expression. But
I while we were talking, I realized in my notes that I had OG Anunoby is like leading the league in steals. Like it's like 3 steals a game. If we are on the same narrative of Marcus Smart, you know, winning, not to take anything away from Marcus Smart, I respect him, but maybe not the Defensive Player of the Year. If we're on our guard game, if we're anything like we were last year, I think the voters might love OG having 3 steals a game. I think that's hard to beat.
That's true. I feel like the numbers should play a bigger role in the Defensive Player of the Year game. I mean, I know they do play a part, and they are a big part of it. But I feel like some of the metrics, the ones we can quantify with our eyes, should be a big part. The ratings and the things that for the computer nerds are great, but the pure numbers are
that
what
year that like all of the Hawks, like the starting five, won the Player of the Week or whatever. That's like the Hawks this year would win Player of the Week in defense, with their active hands. But in terms of people actually impacting the game, I think you're right with Mikal Bridges. I think Giannis is too terrifying, but it's so dependent on the pillar of Brook Lopez. And I think OG with his active hands just out there roaming. I think those are the three main arguments.
I like it. So jumping forward a little bit, Rookie of the Year, Most Improved Player. Those a little bit go hand in hand because Most Improved Player is usually a younger guy. Who you have in those two spots?
I mean, Rookie of the Year, I think that it would be disrespectful to say anybody other than Paolo. I don't agree with how he's reffed. I don't agree with his play style, but he is succeeding, in every way that he can. I think that it looks like young LeBron. I think that the league loves that image and he plays just like him. I think it's great. In terms of Rookie of the Year, I don't think there's anybody else that has a narrative other than
him. I think
he's kind of locked up at the beginning.
I don't think anyone's good enough. I think Paolo Banchero is head and shoulders the best rookie. And that's the end of the story, regardless.
Who's the guy for Indiana that's so good?
Benedict Mathurin, I think.
Yes, Mathurin. I had a horrible take the other night that I said he wouldn't win just because his name is too hard to remember. But I mean, I totally agree. I think that Paolo's doing everything that he needs to be doing. He plays with the kind of pragmatic style that LeBron did at the beginning. He only goes to his his good qualities. The team only institutes his good qualities. But I think the most interesting part about the Orlando Magic is Bol Bol, and I want him to be my Most Improved Player of the Year. I think that he is electric. He's perpetually in his bag. He is always trying to be cool, and he leads the league in 2-point field goal percentage, in true shooting percentage, and in block percentage. When's the last time you had some guy come out of the D League essentially and just take over for this bad team?
That's true. I didn't think about Bol Bol. My Most Improved Player is Anthony Simons in Portland.
I don't disagree with that.
He's just been the CJ McCollum replacement. He was the team for a stretch last year, and they weren't very good, obviously, but they're good now in large part because he's been the CJ McCollum replacement, being younger and having a lot of the same qualities beside Damian Lillard and those guys. And so I don't know if Portland's going to be any good or not. A lot of people had them in Victor Wembanyama.
I disagree with that. I think they're nice. I think they are Jazz nice. They are playing way above their pay grade. And I think that the reason why Anthony Simons is so good, not to take anything away from him, I guess, to set that up, but I think that Dame is just dishing it out. So, with just such meekness, he's so willing to let his young guys succeed in these tough moments. And him dishing it out to Anthony all the time, getting him ready for the success that he's going to have in the league. I think that's great. I think Anthony Simons is super nice.
Yeah. And healthy Damian Lillard, we know, can carry a team a pretty long way in the NBA. That's how.
Yeah, why not? Yeah.
And that's the level of his superstardom. So I don't want to disrespect Portland by saying I don't know how good they can be, but
no, but if you have two guards, you know, that are super nice and score a lot, like, and you like Nurkic is your main defensive presence. Like you know, you're not set up for long-term success.
I guess
I'll say that I don't want to take anything away from it. I love the regular season more than anybody, but in terms of grinding out the playoffs, I don't know if, you know, the GOAT of Portland, Damian Lillard and Anthony Simons are going to be enough.
True. They added Jeremy Grant in the offseason. I like Jeremy Grant.
Yeah, he's nice.
He's a good piece for that team, another quality role player essentially. But all right, so jumping into more of the team-centric awards here, or team-centric topics, I guess.
Yeah.
Surprises in the East and surprises in the West thus far. Who do you think will be – who are the surprises, I guess, and who do you think will continue to surprise as the season goes on and be household names?
Oh, goodness. I have the worst takes on this because we just talked about Portland. That was my surprise team. I was so excited to see Anthony Simons be as good as Damian Lillard has been talking about him. And them succeeding, you know, above expectation. And then my other surprises are negative, which I don't want, but that's what turned out to be left on the note is that Minnesota is just, you know, the culture war there between Anthony Edwards and Carl Anthony Towns, and then adding Rudy Gobert, who has always wanted to be a mentor in the league, and nobody listens to him, which is so sad. Like, he's so nice, but he doesn't have the floor, you know? So I think that Minnesota is my surprise team for being not as good as I expected them to be, which I guess, you know, could fall back on me for having a bad expectation, but adding Rudy Gobert, Karl Anthony Towns, like, just getting owned so hard in the playoffs. Like, I figured he would come back with some kind of energy. And then Anthony Edwards seeing the landscape, I figured he would say, like, wow, like, I really do have an opportunity to succeed here. Let me take it to the next level. And I don't know if he has yet, or I think he might be just disinterested. So I think that's very surprising to me. And then my other Eastern Conference take, which is equally as terrible, is Charlotte for winning a game. Like, just winning one game, I thought that was shocking. You know, PJ Washington coming back, I think that's great. But LaMelo Ball being the only player of note on your team, I didn't think that they would come out winning one game.
That's fair. I like you in the West, I kind of went toward the negative side because there was a lot of expectations from the Western Conference in the offseason, and there's a lot of room for disappointment. What, I guess an eighth of the way in, or not even a quarter yet, an eighth of the way into the season. So
West is so overhyped coming into the season.
It really was. I mean, you thought the Clippers were going to be good. Kawhi hasn't played or hardly has played. The Lakers.
Didn't
expect a lot, but whatever. The Lakers are what they are. The Pelicans, I want the Pelicans to be good. I don't know that they can be good. I don't know if they're constructed well enough, and they're just – I feel like they have a lot of role players. And not.
I love the Pelicans. That's my, like, you know, reluctant love of the season. CJ McCollum joining them, for some reason, it really just, you know, upped my stock in them. I believe in Brandon Ingram, but – you know, no one man is an island. I think that CJ McCollum really took him over the edge.
True. I really want the Pelicans to be on Wembanyama watch, because you pair Zion with Victor Wembanyama, they have a squad at that point, and it's young. It's all young.
That's
and
crazy. That's so wild.
They're going to be too good. They're not going to be there, but.
No, I love the. Well, it doesn't matter. Their pick, it doesn't matter. It's all with the Lakers. You know, the Lakers could just be garbage this year, which I think they are.
That's true.
You know, I don't want to talk about the Lakers because they're
let's just
out of note, but
let's talk about the irony of the Lakers final, like being bad all those years, never landing the number one pick, missing out on the whoever they missed out on when them and Philly had the number one pick, or Boston had that pick every year, missing out on Tatum.
Oh yeah, they could have gone many ways with those mm-hmm. picks. You know, no,
but just not getting the first overall pick in the lottery twice, and then the year they do get it, the pick is ceded to them. That would, oh gosh, that's the basketball.
That's exactly how it should work. That's exactly how it should work. They blew it.
Like, that's true. They blew it and didn't get Jason.
From my you know, weak, you know, mind, like perspective, I think they blew it. Like every choice they've made. You know, Magic got out of there at the right time.
True.
In the worst way. Like, Magic bailed on the organization, but he saw what was going to happen.
It's a textbook in poor management with the Lakers. But
Maybe it's just trusting LeBron. I mean, like, the Cavs, like, you know, trashed their team. Like, there was a plane ride where, like, three people were the same, you know, team member week to week. You know, the Cavs blew it up all for LeBron. They followed his lead and they won. But none of this seems like they followed LeBron except for adding Russell Westbrook.
That's true.
Such a bad move.
That's true. But to get back on topic, the West, there's a lot of room for disappointment. My surprise is Minnesota. I thought they were going to be at least a little like better than they are.
Yeah, I agree.
And then in the East, my surprise from the East, the Cavs are a fun story. They're cute, plucky, whatever you want to call them. They're good.
Surprising.
And they're not as surprising as, I mean, they were good last year until I think they got hurt and some different things happened.
Donovan's so nice too. Like, nobody ever disagreed with Donovan not being able to score 25 points.
True. True. But my surprise in the East, I think, and I don't know if they're the surprise right now, but I think they're going to be the surprise for a lot of people, is the Hawks with DeJounte Murray, Trae Young. They're going to be lethal. They're getting it together. They're figuring it out. Bogey's going to come back and add another shooter. If AJ Griffin can shoot it like he shot it the other night, or at least be consistent.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. What a good addition.
Give you 10 to 12 and solid defense. You'll be fine there. You don't have to, that decreases the number of pieces you have to add at the trade deadline potentially. You're getting great backcourt play from the Holiday brothers and DeJounte Murray in the second group. You add maybe another stretch big at the deadline, or a big that you want to go to offensively for the second group. That's not Okongwu. And I think you feel pretty good about the Hawks.
That's what I'd love to ask you. With your infinite wisdom right now, I think that we are not just because we beat the Bucks last night, because I think the Bucks with Chris Middleton are way different than just, you know, without him. But is Capella might not be enough to score over 10 points and hold Giannis, you know, accountable at least. And I don't know if Okongwu can score his 10, but I don't know if he can do anything. I think that the whole East is formatted around stopping Giannis. Do you think that there's a trade out there where we could, you know, dump Capella and maybe somebody else and get a big worth stopping Giannis? I just don't think that it's out there.
I don't either. I don't know that there is a – at this point right now, I don't know if there's another human being on the planet that is a Giannis stopper. I don't know if there's such a guy in the NBA right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you can argue. I mean, Kevin Durant isn't that great of a defender, but he's another long guy.
Great help side. He's great. Like, just like Giannis, like with Brook Lopez, like if he has like Nick Claxton, like on his game, like KD can come over like and help. Like, and I think that like Capella, like if Capella's on, you know, on his best game, I think that he can be formidable and we can have some help side stuff with Okongwu or like maybe Hunter or something like that. But I think that we're kind of left to our own devices at this point. I don't think that there's a trade scenario that's going to make us better at this point, because there isn't a trade that would help us beat Giannis.
Exactly.
I don't think there's one out there. So I don't think there's any need to mess up our team as it is.
No, as I mean, barring injury, obviously, and barring a complimentary piece that may come available, I don't think I agree with you. There's no sense in trying to move anything to think this. There's no move that's going to put you over the top as far as stopping Giannis or make you better than the Bucks on paper. So with that in mind, I think I like the Hawks. They're
me too.
The way they match up against guys like Giannis, Joel Embiid, I love what they do when they play guys like that. They use Capella and kind of have him sit back and look to alter shots at the rim. We know what Giannis's game is. They're active defensively with DeAndre Hunter. And then they do the same thing. Okongwu's very bouncy, athletic. He's going to affect a lot of shots around the rim. And so, I mean, we've seen Okongwu, who gives up probably, 40, 50 pounds of Joel Embiid, dominate Joel Embiid for long stretches. And the same thing with Giannis. There was a period last year where Okongwu was just outplayed Giannis for a couple of games there when they played the Bucks. So not to say you're not going to do that in a seven-game stretch, and you're going to have to withstand their run because the Bucks have so many guys with Middleton, Drew Holiday, Grayson Allen, as much as I hate to say it, is a viable contributor. And everything else they have around Giannis, that those guys knock down shots. But
Pat Connaughton is not back yet. Like, Pat Connaughton and Chris Middleton saved them in playoff games. Like, those guys are too nice for the team. I think that the Bucks are the new age Warriors. Everybody's way too comfortable with their role. They've been together too long.
True. But yeah, I think the Hawks do as good a job as anyone matching up, whether it is whatever you have to do, they do as good a job as anyone is matching up. So with what they try to do, and everyone's got a different philosophy, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. And if Giannis is going to dominate the game, it doesn't matter what you do, he's going to dominate the game. If he's in the zone and he's working like that. But really quickly, Eastern Conference Finals matchup, Western Conference Finals matchup, your finals matchup, and your winner.
Oh boy. I want to add a little bit on what you said about the Hawks. I'm a big believer. I think that the active hands that the Hawks have between every guard that plays for Atlanta right now, it seems like Nate McMillan has gotten the cagey active hands in their mind. And I think as a team, we probably lead the league in steals. I think that's going to save us in playoff series against Giannis. I think that's what sets us apart. We might not be able to stop him defensively, but we can stop their guards from getting in a rhythm because of our active hands. And leading into that, I think that the Bucks are going to the finals. I mean, they're just too comfortable. They're way too nice, barring injury. This being so early, I think that Atlanta or Toronto are the only two teams that could match up throughout the playoffs and just work through it. I think all the other teams, maybe Boston, just, the Time Lord not coming back. They don't have any big man presence. Al Horford, shooting six threes a game is not going to work for you in this playoff series. So I think that it does come down to Atlanta or Toronto having the matchup situations to get through the playoffs. And I think the Bucks are just too good. So it's not going to matter who they match up against. In the Western Conference Finals, I think that Golden State, you just have to give them respect for being there last year. I think that their core is too good and they have the ability to manipulate lineups in a way that most teams don't. That people just buy in. Miami would be like an equivocal like team in just terms of buy-in that Golden State does, but they're just Steph Curry's too good. Dallas and Memphis are the same. I think they're on the same tier. It comes down to, are you going to be able to stop Ja? Are you going to be able to stop Luka? Is the supporting cast going to be able to rise to the occasion? And I think New Orleans is the like Toronto or Atlanta of the West, where their team is just so well dispersed. They have, their few icons that they just rely on, and then everybody else understands it. It's just a mind meld of a team. So I think that they can make through the playoffs, but they're not going to be a regular season darling.
True, very true. I I like what you said about the Hawks and Toronto being kind of on the similar plane. If Toronto can, within a year, 2 years, whatever, really emerge as a top team in the East, Toronto will be the model for how every team in the NBA wants to build their team. You see Oklahoma City.
Dude, in terms of height, like the Hawks are like match up with them so well. Like Clint Capela's only 6'10". Like we go 6'10" to, you know, Trae Young's maybe 6 foot, you know, on a great day. But like DeJounte Murray's like, you know, 6'4", 6'5". Like it's 6'5" to 6'10" throughout the lineup. It's enlightened thinking.
Oh, for sure. But I think Toronto, just with a bunch of guys who can handle the ball, can play in theory all five positions, can play inside, outside, can post you up, can shoot the three, and are long, capable, willing defenders. If Oklahoma City turns out to be what I think they want them to be, they'll kind of be constructed in some type of model of Toronto and Atlanta, and that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander will kind of be the Trey. And Chet Holmgren and the rest of those guys will be the long athletic guys who wreak havoc and do those things. But if Toronto can, like I said, make a conference finals appearance, be a perennial top team within the next 2 to 3 years, everyone in the league will kind of go to that model, I think. And it'll go away from one guy like Giannis and shooters to trying to put guys who can handle the ball, do it all, who can attack, who can also spot up, trying to get well-rounded basketball players, essentially, who are also long and athletic, and that's not a bad formula. But in the East, I still think the Celtics figure it out. I don't know that they are as good as they were last year. I still think that I think they have the best duo in the game maybe right now, and I think they figure it out. And so I think Celtics Bucks. I'm taking the Bucks. And then in the West, so many teams that you can say you can buy for. Suns Grizzlies is my pick. I took the Suns. I have buyer's remorse about the Suns right now.
Dream it, dude. Let's hear it.
I have buyer's remorse just because the Suns have the most dumpster fire potential of just about any contender that isn't already a dumpster fire, if you don't count Brooklyn. They have the most dumpster fire potential of any team that we've seen, just as far as team chemistry and things going awry from the inside out.
That's what I'm saying. Jay Crowder doesn't want to play for you? Like, what? What's going on? True.
That's good. That's the Hawks addition. That's going to give them just that extra ounce of toughness, I think. But
oh my gosh!
That all in all,
so nice if we get Jay.
All in all, I think I take the Bucks. They're probably not going to win it, but I take the Bucks in my way too early.
Dude, there is no indicator that they are not going to win. They're too good.
True.
They have Joe Ingles like just sitting around rehabbing. Like that guy's a pick and roll maestro.
True.
So it's gonna be tough. It's gonna be tough against the Bucks, but that's the fun of the regular season, you know. True.
The regular season will tell its own tale, and then we will we'll see. It'll be fun. But before we go, hang on. Full disclosure, I have 3 minutes left in this recording, so can we talk about the Hawks in 3 minutes?
I mean, yeah, I can give you a list of stuff that I want to say or whatever. Okay.
Sweet. So I can edit this part out. All right, so before we go, I want to talk about the Hawks for just a second. We'll talk more about them as the season goes on, but as far as Trey and DeJounte Murray coming together, is that a pairing that's a match made in heaven? Do we love it? And what do you think they need to do to kind of get over the top, if you will, this year?
I think the fantastic part about DeJounte and Trey is that now that DeJounte is there, everybody trusts that they can just push the ball. You know, before then it was give it to Trey and it kind of held up our transition offense. I don't think that our transition offense is perfect right now. I don't think that everybody knows their spots. You know, as I talked about earlier with the Bucks, everybody felt comfortable catching the ball there. I think that's going to come later in the season. I think that pushing the ball with DeJounte has opened up a new level of quick point making that we don't typically get with the Atlanta Hawks under the Trey era, which is no disrespect. And I think that you were right earlier that there is just no, There's no fixing the post defense in terms of like trading or anything like that. I think it does come down to Clint Capela just, you know, eating 8 points but working his tail off for you know, like stopping Giannis like throughout the playoffs or whatever. So I think that we have a good solid team, but I think that this is the first year and it's not a wash, but it's a definite learning experience.
For sure.
If we keep this core together, next year is going to be nuts.
For sure. I agree. And you never know what's going to happen. The NBA is, it can be a soap opera. So you never know what's going to happen, who's going to be available. But I think you said it best. They're not a complete team yet. And, you know, Bogey's going to come back. There's a couple more pieces they may add at the trade deadline. Who knows what's going to happen. But the most important thing is they're meshing. We've seen progress from game one to game 10 or 11 or whatever it is. I think we'll see progress from game 10 to game 20 and 20 to 30 and so on and so forth. And that's the important thing. As long as Trey and DeJounte Murray have this thing figured out by game 35, 40, and are beginning to play with a rhythm and a pace that we like you talked about too, it's not get the rebound, hand it to Trey, and let him walk it up. The defense can get set. They can load up, and you have to worry about the transition attack, the pace. DeJounte Murray in transition is a menace. He's a problem. And so I think the pairing is going to work. DeAndre Hunter is going to morph into a third fiddle type option to Trey and DeJounte's Batman and Robin, or how Batman, whatever you want to call them. You know, we saw the flash from DeAndre Hunter. I don't know that he's going to be the guy that's going to, he's not going to dump in, you know, 27, 28, 30 points a night, where he's never going to lead the league in scoring. But if he can be more than a 3-and-D guy, but less than a guy who commands the basketball, and be around 18 to 22 points a night, give you lockdown defense on the other team's best player or whoever it may be, and contribute in that way, that's his ceiling to me. I still think you might need another player. I don't know if you can win a championship if DeAndre Hunter is your third best, but can you compete and get really far? And if you have a year where a guy gets in a tweaked ankle here and you know, something else there, suspension there, whatever it may be, can that group get you to the cusp of an NBA title? I think so. We saw it happen, what, 3 seasons ago now? So there's no reason to not believe this Hawks team could be equally as competitive as that team was.
I totally agree with your sentiment. I think that DeAndre Hunter, the coaching staff or the team is trying to fulfill what John Collins should have been. It seems like John Collins is so set up to be, he has such a nice like jumper. He could, you know, shoot, catch and shoot threes. He's a, you know, dynamic athlete. He can jump up and catch lobs. Seems like him and Trey are so connected, but in terms of the offensive scheme, they don't have any place for him. They would rather have catch and shooters out there, and he's not fulfilling the role. And so I think that DeAndre Hunter, him playing defense better than John Collins, is keeping him, you know, in the rotation and more interesting. But I don't know if he can't progress into being more of a catch and shoot, like pick and pop kind of guy. I don't know if there's longevity in our rotation for him.
Fair. That's fair. I know Gatlin I was texting him the other day. Gatlin said he thinks that they may move Bogey into the starting lineup, which feels like a defensive nightmare at times for that team, or that starting group at least. Move Bogey in the starting lineup to give DeAndre Hunter more touches as a bench player and lead the second group as a scorer. I don't love it, but it could be an opportunity for him to blossom more if they want to get him touches or get him time with that second unit in the second group. I don't think that's going to be the place where he succeeds more. I think he's going to need a little more around him than the second group is going to provide. And John Collins, Clint Capela, Trey Young, those guys provide that. DeJounte Murray, when he's out there, those guys provide that. And I think that's where he's going to blossom, because we've seen DeAndre Hunter have to try to find his own shot. And aside from, was it game 5 in that Miami series? It doesn't.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, work. What an electric performance. That was so great for him. But, yeah, that's not the expectation.
No, absolutely not. So last bit here for the Hawks going in, you know, in, it's early. No one knows what they need at this point. Everyone thinks, you know, their roster is going to win a championship, to be quite honest, except for a handful of teams. But for the Hawks, what is the biggest need that they could acquire, the piece or whatever it may be, that they could go out and acquire on the open market to actually make a difference and improve their chances as a playoff contender?
My gosh, I think it, you know, last year we had Gallinari, who him and Bogey as our, you know, bench leaders. I think that that created so many points, you know, 30 points probably between them, either scoring it themselves or assisting off of it. They ran our second unit so well. I think that just Bogey, you know, might not be enough to make it, you know, make a difference in the playoffs. And so I think that finding another veteran that can score, I don't agree with how well Al Horford does at the Celtics. It doesn't, you know, none of his performances seem like he should be doing that well. If we could get, the Al Horford now, you know, instead of the Al Horford in 2017, if we could get something like that on our bench, some reliable source of scoring that could get us 15, you know, and could also get a couple boards on the bench, I think that would be, that's the difference maker for the Hawks right now.
True. I mean, I think a piece of me says they had that on the roster and they traded it to Sacramento with Kevin Herter. I know you're a big Kevin Herter guy. I didn't think the move was in hindsight,
unnecessary.
At the time, I was like, okay, we thought it was a move for a bigger piece. So we're like, this works. Hindsight's 2020, of course, but looking back, if the move was purely to barely get under the luxury tax, it wasn't worth it. If that was management's thought, I was like, we're gonna be under the luxury tax by getting offloading Kevin Herter, he's a young asset, whatever, and we're just gonna be under the luxury tax, and that's all we want to do is get under the luxury tax. It wasn't worth it. Pay the tax because you're only a couple of million dollars if that over. Pay the tax, and you actually have a bench unit that is now formidable on manageable deals. All of it's on manageable deals. Bogey's an expiring deal that you're going to keep through this year and next year, obviously. Kevin Herter can morph into the Bogey of the future as the guy who's going to shoot it. And if you think DeJounte Murray's a long-term option as your quote-unquote backup point guard to run the second unit, he's also a guy you can insert into the starting lineup who can ball for the next 5 to 8 years at a minimum. So I think they had the piece they were looking for and traded it to get under the luxury tax, which doesn't make much sense to me.
It's weak management.
And that tells me all I need to know kind of in conclusion about this Hawks team, or at least from a front office perspective. The reason and I'm sure you do too, we want to put the Hawks in the conference championship, put them in the NBA finals. That's the tell at this point for me. Management doesn't believe this is a championship roster because they're not willing to go into the luxury tax based on what they've told us. They say they will go into the tax for the right guys, for the right group that they feel is a contender in that given year. They don't think this team's a contender. They don't. And as a player on that team, I would feel a little offended that you've kind of shown your hand. For me, that's the reason I think the Hawks are at maximum a second round team, because management, who knows the NBA much better than me, who follows, who looks at all the reports, who sees everything, they think in a given year where things go to chalk, this team's not a contender because they didn't want to go into the luxury tax for it. And that's the fact of the matter. That's it.
Yep.
And I'd love it, hate it, whatever. That's just the facts. And that's what we're here to bring, is that third eye thinking and produce and give the facts, because that's the thing that all the other outlets who cover the Hawks can't necessarily say, because they have to maintain the relationship to get interviews, to get players. Well, guess what? We don't have any players coming on here. This is just us talking shop.
So we can
see those things play out and voice them, because it's true. That's just the way it is. Management doesn't see this as a championship roster, and therefore they're not going to go into the luxury tax to keep it together. Plain and simple. And it's unfortunate, because I think Kevin Herter has a longer shelf life in the league than Bogey, but Bogey's a more unmovable contract because he's older. I like Herter with this team, but that's just the way it is. You know, it's business, and that's the business, and that's what they saw. So, all in all, I mean, I'm excited for the Hawks. Don't get me wrong. I'm excited for the growth and the development and looking at it through that lens, the lame lens of, you know, oh, we're excited about the process and the growth and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a fun season. There's going to be a lot of great moments. The Hawks are going to be good. Don't get me wrong. But championship worthy, let's be real about it. I don't think so. You know,
I think we're going to be a playoff darling. I don't think we're going to be, you know, winning all of the regular season games. I think that everything about the season is subject towards matchups in the playoffs, seeing who sticks, seeing who doesn't. And we might make a run. We made a run with less talent, I would say, you know, to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals. We could make it to the Eastern Conference Finals easily this year if everything goes according to plan. And then the year after that, you know, maybe if upper management respects the program, we could figure something out and maybe make it to the finals next year. But we got a really good chance at making it deep in the playoffs this year. I agree.
I like it. I love it. Thanks for being on the show today, Jack. I definitely appreciate it. Always welcome back anytime. So anytime you want to be on or have some great takes to spew, just let us know. And we are always available. So I'm excited to have you back.
I can't wait for it.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys for listening. That is all we have for you guys today. Do appreciate your listenership. Be sure, again, to follow us on social media. Also, check us out wherever you get your podcast, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever it may be. We are at the 4-0 Forum. I'm Isaiah. And for Jack, thank you very much for listening. And we can't wait to talk to you next time.
Thank you very much. Have a good night.